The unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it. We can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. Now, if you'll remember, we've been talking about the fifth vow of Samantabhadra Bodhisattva, learning how to rejoice in the merit of others. And I have introduced what in Buddhism is called the four Brahma Viharas, the four divine abidings, the way in which we raise ourselves, raise our characters, convert ourselves from what might be called the ordinary mind of human beings to that which is divine among human beings, what raises them, dignifies them, and enables them. Those four Brahma Viharas are the loving kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, and equanimity. In the Buddha's teaching on loving kindness, there are quite a few stories and commentaries which all help to flesh this teaching out. And my purpose in telling you all about it is to help you understand how Samantabhadra Bodhisattva's vows can be put into practice and applied in this world where we all are. Now, as I mentioned, the chief poison to which loving kindness may be applied is that of hate or anger. And before one even starts on loving kindness itself, one has to come to some kind of an acceptance or understanding of what makes loving kindness possible for ourselves. There are ways to start the practice of loving kindness, some of which are regarded by the masters of old as more effective than others. But just as with anything that is worthwhile to do in life, which is long-term, Buddhist training, meditation, the practice of loving-kindness requires patience. 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 Patience comes highly recommended as a forerunner to the practice of loving kindness itself. Okay. One of the six paramitas, if you read through the scripture of Brahma's Net, which talks about the 40 foundations of training, Vairochana Buddha breaks them down into 10, four sections of 10, and each one is preceded by patience and equanimity. Patience is also a must when it comes to meditation. There is a nice coincidence here that not only is patience the forerunner of loving kindness, but it's also the byproduct. If you practice loving kindness, you will learn patience. If you practice meditation, you will learn patience. You have to. It's the only thing that will keep you there sitting in front of that wall for longer than 30 seconds. Interestingly enough, patience is the very thing that converts anger into loving kindness. We're going to call this a coincidence so that you don't know or don't feel that there is a conspiracy afoot to make you train more deeply. We'll break the news to you about this later. I realized in preparing this talk that I'm going to have to give a whole lot of attention to patience, which I can't do this morning because I'm too impatient. But I was reminded in learning it of an interesting exchange that takes place in Shakespeare's play Macbeth. Macbeth invites a doctor to come to his castle to visit Lady Macbeth, who, if you are familiar with the story, does have a problem with anger. Okay? Among a number of other things. However, Macbeth invites the doctor because he suspects that Lady Macbeth is sick and wants to seek a physic, a medicine that is going to cure her of this complaint. And the doctor examines her, and then Macbeth asks him what is wrong. And the doctor says, "Not so sick, my lord, as she is troubled with thick coming fancies that keep her from her rest." And Macbeth says, "Cure her of that. Canst thou not minister to a mind diseased, pluck from the memory a rooted sorrow, raise out the written troubles of the brain, and with some sweet, oblivious antidote, cleanse the stuffed bosom of that perilous stuff which weighs upon the heart?" And the doctor replies with those famous words, which are, in fact, the teaching of the Buddha: therein the patient must minister to himself. Truer words were never spoken. In the practice of meditation, which gives rise to patience and loving kindness, we must learn to minister to ourselves and not seek a physic, not seek a medicine that's going to do it for us in some kind of sweet and oblivious way. Unfortunately, this medicine has not been manufactured yet, although I'm sure all the drug companies would love to get a hold of it, make them rich. Not to expect something to appear from the outside that's going to do it, because it's not going to appear. We have to do it ourselves. We have to apply it ourselves. Now, it's generally recommended that in the beginning, when you are trying to practice loving kindness, that you don't do it. Don't start it. Practicing it towards someone you don't like. Don't start it that way. Also, don't start it practicing it towards somebody you love. Also, don't start it practicing it towards someone you feel completely neutral about. And definitely don't start it practicing it with the object of someone that you feel deep hostility for. The commentaries don't specifically say why, but they do say that in every case it is fatiguing. Which ought to tell us something, that it may be too difficult to start it like this. Too taxing. Plus the fact that if you do tend to do it the most difficult way possible and start trying to practice loving kindness with someone you feel hostility for, you'll just get angry all over again. And that will defeat the whole purpose of the exercise. So don't do it that way. If you practice it towards someone you are physically or sexually attracted to, you will give rise to lust, the commentarists say. And this will result in what is charmingly called in Buddhism beating the wall at night. Like someone who is just beating on the wall all night long. The Italians call this biting your hand. Buddhists call it beating the wall at night. So don't do it that way. I'm serious about all this, really. I can cite you chapter and verse for this. Also, it's not recommended to practice loving kindness in the beginning towards someone who's dead. And the reason is very simple. They're not there anymore to practice loving kindness towards. And you need an object. You need somebody alive who's there. I wish this person to be happy. It's difficult to wish someone to be happy when they're dead because they're gone. Okay? So, who's left? Sort of narrows the field. Well, there's somebody left. And that's why we start with the practice of loving kindness towards oneself. That's why when you start to meditate, the best way to practice meditation is to sit down and to do it. You. It's a wonderful thing to praise, to recommend to your friends, but the best way to do it is to sit down and to do it. Okay. In such a way that we have compassion for ourselves and we learn to refrain from judgment. Now, it is perfectly acceptable, recommended. Even the Buddha himself said to begin the wish and the practice of loving kindness in the following way. May I be free, may I be happy and free from suffering. Or may I keep myself free from enmity, affliction and anxiety, and live happily. And for many of us, when one does this, the first question that comes up is, isn't this selfish? And the answer is yes. It's very selfish. And the next question that comes up is, well, isn't that bad if it's selfish? And the answer is no. As long as the wish for one's happiness does not stop with oneself. You have to start somewhere. Reverend Master would always tell us, we always start in religion on the me side. What's in it for me? It's selfish. You can't stay there, but that's where you start. And there always is just a teeny little bit of that that's with us. But as long as my own wish for happiness does not block out the wish for happiness for all beings, it's an okay place to start. Because Buddhism is really a very sensible religion. It presupposes that you are going to be a reasonable person. And that once you experience happiness or peace of some kind for yourself, you're going to wish that everybody has it as well. That is going to bring out the best in us. Very sensible attitude. Now, maybe one has to dig very deeply in some cases. Okay, but it is there. Even though we can suffer from anger, cruelty, jealousy, attachment, the Buddha recognized that human beings could free themselves from these poisons. And it begins on the me side with the wish of, I would like to be happy. I pray that I may be happy. And in finding some remnant, some piece of happiness to extend that wish for others. So we have to start here at home with us. And simply let that naturally touch other people. I am happy. Just as I want to be happy and dread pain, as I want to live and not to die, so do other beings too. And this is not a bad thing. And even after his enlightenment, the Buddha said, I visited all quarters with my mind, nor found I any dearer than myself. Self is likewise to every other dear. Who loves himself will never harm another. This is the great depth that Buddhism starts from. And I hope it really encourages you, because people tend to get the idea that any religion that's going to say life is suffering and the cause of suffering is me. And that's the good news. That it's going to go downhill from there. And it is saying just that, that life is suffering and that the cause of it is me. But I am also the agent of change. And I have the capacity for greed, hatred, and delusion, certainly. Or for anger, cruelty, jealousy, and attachment, yes. But I also have the capacity for loving kindness, for compassion, for meditation, for training. This capacity is something inherent, it is natural. And I can just
do it. And in doing it, in setting my mind to doing it, by being patient, by putting effort into it. Maybe a lot of effort, maybe effort for a long time, but nevertheless, in doing that, things happen. I actually become happy. And I help to cause beings around me to become happy as well. After one has learned to generate loving kindness for oneself, the scriptures recommend that one then brings to mind those things about another who one respects. You know, kind words, qualities, who that endear us, that endears the person to us. And then one wishes for that person to be happy. I wish for this being to be happy. Then, once one does that, one cultivates loving kindness towards a dearly loved friend. Because one already knows how to practice loving kindness towards someone who one respects, and who in one's mind that one then treats as a dearly loved friend. It is an easy transition to make to a dearly loved friend, to practice loving kindness. And then towards somebody who's completely neutral. And to treat them as a dearly loved friend. You see, we don't know each other from, Adam or Eve. Me, you. You are dearly loved friends. I don't even know you. This is the power of metta and loving kindness. And then, not stopping there, towards a hostile person, as someone who is neutral. Not as a dearly loved friend, not yet, but as somebody who's neutral. That's how it extends, how it starts. Now, I look at this as a form of contemplation, really, that in our interactions of the day, the people with whom we come into contact with, we have these various circles of contact. And here's a way of contemplating loving kindness for each of those circles of contact, and then extending that loving kindness to all of them, beginning with ourselves. What really helps in this, and the real secret of it, but I'm going to tell you what the secret is, the real secret of it is that what really helps is meditation. But meditation is the lubrication for the whole thing. You see, meditation practice is themeless. It's not focused on any particular subject. It's not directed in any particular way. And yet, by its very nature, it helps to bring about the practice of loving kindness. Compassion, non-judgment. Just by sitting there and not judging, just by sitting there and being compassionate. I've experienced this as a kind of a washing or cleansing, because when I originally started training, I was extremely angry. You know, I shook, and I didn't know why. I was mad. That's why. And the medication acts as a kind of a spiritual WD-40. It helps this constricted, squashed down anger arise, and it enables us to see it in its full appearance. Then it enables us to allow it to come and go, and then it enables us to allow it to dissipate like steam. And it also enables us to allow it not to come back, but to actually turn into something much, much more positive. It actually transforms into compassion and finally gratitude. That one is actually grateful in the long run for the things that have caused suffering for you. Not just, oh, yeah, this happened. I should be grateful for that. But I am here today, and I am experiencing the happiness of today because of this. And the connection is clear, and it's right there. And when it happened, it was something that hurt us terribly and made us angry. So, the combination of practicing meditation just sincerely, simply, and contemplating loving kindness is a very simple teaching which really can convert the grosser forms of anger if you employ patience and love and just work away at it. Now, what about the more refined forms of anger? You know, we all know about losing it. But there are much more refined forms of anger, socially acceptable ones, like resentment and irritation. In the case of someone who has hurt us and for whom we feel resentments, there is good advice available. It's not difficult advice. And it's nothing really that's any different. It's just the willingness to keep being willing to enter into loving kindness for this person, to continue to contemplate it, and to go in and out of it, to keep practicing meditation and just keep working away on it, working away and working away. Yes, we've gotten to the point where we no longer want to rip the person's lips off. That is a very big achievement. Okay. There's more, though, than that. Again, beginning with oneself and working with oneself to the point where this person who the very thought of them would, you know, get us really upset, to get to the point where it's neutral. Oh, I'm thinking about so-and-so. Mm-hmm. Okay. Comes and goes. This is where, again, patience, love, effort. You can really do this. It's not easy, but it is possible. And sometimes, again, and I love the commentarist for this, sometimes this doesn't work. But help is on the way, the form of the Buddha Dharma. We, as monks, are reminded to reflect upon various teachings of the Buddha. And this is something that I would encourage all of you to do as well. To amass your Buddhist books, to make a wonderful index on anger, and to write down all the things that you find that help you. And then when you find yourself getting angry, to start contemplating them. By contemplating, just read them and sit with them. Don't try to make the anger go away. Just sit with them. Because this allows the possibility for conversion to take place. Monks, monastics, are reminded to reflect upon the saw. And the saw has to do with something that the Buddha said. Bhikkhus, monks, even if bandits brutally severed limb from limb with a two-handled saw, one who entertains hatred in one's heart on that account would not be one who carried out my teaching. So the monks kind of, we have it in the face. Another one is, to repay angry men in kind is worse than to be angry first. Repay not angry men in kind and win a battle hard to win. The wheel, which means welfare, the wheel of both he does promote, his own and then the others too. Who shall another's anger know and mindfully maintain his peace? So the monks are reminded this in this way. The moment you start getting angry, the moment you start thinking, yes, I'm angry, I'm irritated, I'm resenting, and I'm justified, you're supposed to think about the saw. Makes you ask questions. Are you being severed limb from limb? Well, no. Well, even if you are, don't give in to this. Okay. And then you're supposed to contemplate. There's also another one that one is supposed to contemplate, and this is good for all of us. The Buddha said, Bhikkhus, there are seven things gratifying and helpful to an enemy that happen to one who is angry, whether woman or man. What seven? Hear, Bhikkhus, an enemy wishes thus for his enemy. Let him be ugly. Okay? Why is that? An enemy does not delight in an enemy's beauty. Okay? Now, this angry person is a prey to anger, ruled by anger. Though well-bathed, well-anointed, with hair and beard trimmed and clothed in white, which is the traditional way a Buddhist layman is clothed, yet he is ugly, being a prey to anger. This is the first thing gratifying and helpful to an enemy that befalls one who is angry, whether woman or man. So this is telling you, watch your mind. Because when you begin to think through these thoughts, you know, you don't have to be in a killing rage. All you have to do is start thinking, God, so-and-so is really angry, is really ugly. Furthermore, an enemy wishes thus for his enemy. Let that person lie in pain. Okay? Or let that person have no good fortune. Let that person not be wealthy. Let that person not be famous. And let that person have no good friends. Let that person not, on the breakup of the body after death, reappear in a happy destiny in the heavenly world. Okay. Why is that? An enemy does not delight in an enemy's going to a happy destiny. It's, you think about it, though. Think about the things that go through your mind when you're angry, how it starts, how it carries through, how it explodes if it gets to that point, how it ends, the damages that it does. These are ways of simply looking at what is going on, contemplating them, and being able to say somewhere along in the process, I don't think I want to go down this road. And then being able to put into practice loving kindness, meditation to start. Whoop, I'm getting angry. Now I need to remember. May I be happy, free from suffering. May this person be happy, free from suffering. And to work at it like that. I may be boiling about what's going on, but I'm not going to stay boiling, and I'm going to be boiling a lot less long if I'm thinking, may this person be happy and free from suffering. There is a lovely poem which appears in one of the texts on loving kindness that I wanted to read to you because I think, too, it is very relevant. And it has to do with learning not to hurt oneself through the poison of anger. Suppose an enemy has hurt you now in what is his domain. Why try yourself as well to hurt your mind? That is not his domain. In tears you left your family. They had been kind and helpful too. So why not leave your enemy, the anger that brings harm to you? This anger that you entertain is gnawing at the very roots of all the virtues that you guard. Who is there such a fool as you? Another does ignoble deeds, so you are angry. How is this? Do you then want to copy too the sort of acts that he commits? Suppose another to annoy provokes you with some odious act. Why suffer anger to spring up and do as he would have you do? If you get angry, then maybe you make him suffer, maybe not. Though with the hurt that anger brings, you certainly are punished now. If anger-blinded enemies set out to tread the path of woe, do you, by getting angry too, intend to follow heel to toe? If hurt is done you by a foe because of anger on your part, then put your anger down, for why should you be harassed groundlessly? Since states last but a moment's time, those aggregates by which was done the odious act have ceased. So now, what is it you are angry with. Whom shall he hurt who seeks to hurt another in the other's absence? Your presence is the cause of hurt. Why are you angry then with him? I think that this is one of the lovely, simple poems that speak for themselves. So I'm not going to insult your intelligence by explaining it to you, because this explanation is perfectly clear. But the pain that we do to ourselves through the poison of anger is devastating. And the teaching of the Buddha is such that one needs to approach this from the point of view of loving kindness, to be happy and at peace, to refrain from that which causes one not to be happy and not to be at peace. And this is anger. To, in order to be happy and at peace, this is an all right thing, as long as this does not block the happiness and peacefulness of other beings. And in wishing one's own happiness and working towards that, you are also working towards the happiness of other beings. So these are some ways to approach anger, irritation, and resentment. Don't wait until you get mad. Watch for the little resentments, the little grudges, the little irritations. Get them while they're small. When you get them while they're small, when you see them while they're small, they don't build into this big thing that then causes a tremendous amount of karma that you have to clean up for years. Serene reflection meditation. This is the themeless, directionless, supposedly, practice meditation. The contemplation of loving kindness and the willingness to keep doing it until you let go of the anger. Until we let go of something means that, poof, it's not there anymore. Contemplating the precepts about not holding on to anger. That ninth precept, when it says, don't be angry, it is not saying anger must not arise. It's saying, if it arises, don't hold on to it. How do you not hold on to it? Practice loving kindness. A wonderful substitute. What also will help is letting go of the immediate expectation that it's going to vanish in the next 5 minutes. It will vanish when it vanishes. It may be there for some time. If it has been there for a long time and it has been particularly well squashed and kept at bay, it may take longer for it to convert. But convert it will, if there is love and there is patience. And the last thing one can do is the daily and continual practice of the above. Your own mind will tell you. Your own mind will show you. Does this irritate me? Okay. Do I resent this? Okay. Do I bear a grudge? Okay. Does this make me mad? Okay. And then meditate. Have compassion. Don't judge. Loving kindness. Be patient. Let go of the expectations. And keep doing it. Take care of yourselves.